You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
I'm Peanut Tillman. This is my guy Roman Harper, and this is the NFL Player Second Acts podcast. We're here in Phoenix, Arizona at the NFL annual meetings, and it's been a great time. We've had tons of interviews, tons of coaches, former players, head coaches, GMs, got some golf, we got sunshine.
I mean, keep going with the list, man. You name it, we got it. And we kind of did it all here today. Also, before we get started and going too far, I want to make sure we tell all of our listeners to continue to tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to go out there, give us a like, give us a review. Anywhere you listen to your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts or iHeartRadio Podcasts, make sure you can find us on any one of those platforms and make sure you give us a like, a review, and a comment.
This next guy we have coming up, I mean, I can't say enough about him. One of my favorite people in the world.
Yes.
Has poured a lot into my life, a lot in your life personally.
Yes.
An amazing man. This is the head coach of the Washington Commanders, Ron Rivera. Take a listen.
Welcome to the show, Coach. No, I appreciate it. It's good to be here. Good to see some of my favorite players, too, as well. You know, very fortunate to have coached guys like you. I mean, guys that epitomize what football is really about. I mean, they play the game the right way, do things the right way. But really, it's about team and family.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, Coach, I'll just tell a personal story. I remember it my first year coming to you guys. I had been with the Saints for 8 years, so I was a rivalry, and I kind of heated up that whole thing with some of the plays and things that we did back then. But I remember being in that room on that team, and we lost 8 straight games at one point in time in 2014. And you were the most consistent. You never batted an eye. You continue to push forward, continue to have this self-belief that I had major doubt, but there was no wavering in you. And that is what a true leader does, is when it's dark outside, when it's cold and nobody else wants to come to work, I'm the first one there and I'm the first one leading the charge and being in front of that room and telling us the why. And so you came up to me after we played the Saints, and you said you would talk to my former staff. And I had not had a great relationship at that time, in that point. And you said, Roman, you were one of those guys that you should have retired with that team. They know that. They miss you. But I couldn't be more happy to have you in my locker room now. And that special relationship, a bond with players, I know you share that with so many of your players. How do you get to that point and being that open and honest with them?
I think the biggest thing is if you're upfront with the guys, you tell them the truth about why you do the things you do, I think it makes sense to them. And I learned that because when I played for Mike Ditka, I'll never forget. It was 1980. It was training camp of 88. Mm-hmm. And we had gotten beat in the first round of the playoffs a couple of times. And so we go into training camp that year, and he is just killing us. I mean, he is riding us. He wouldn't back down 1 ounce. And the players are getting frustrated. And I was one of the captains. And so a couple of the guys came to me and said, Chico, man, you got to go talk to Iron. There's something up with him, man. He's got to calm down. So I said, all right. So we had practice that day. We finished practice and we're walking off the field and I put myself close to him. And we were in Platteville, Wisconsin at training camp. So I put myself close to him. And so he says, hey, Chico, what's going on? And he said, well, you know, I'm glad you asked. And I said, look, I got to talk to you. And he says, what's wrong? I said, coach, why are you kicking and, you know, excuse me for saying, but kicking the shit out of us.
Yeah.
I mean, you're honest, you're pushing. I mean, we've had 2 days. We haven't had a break. The guys are getting frustrated, getting angry with you. What's going on? He said, Ronnie, he said, you know, I would never ask you guys to do anything I didn't do. You know, I wouldn't do anything, make you guys do something that I thought was impossible. Mm-hmm. I know you guys can push through. I know you guys can get through it. I said, yeah, but why? He said, Ronnie, we've been knocked out of the playoffs in the first round 2 years in a row. That shouldn't have happened. Not with the teams that we've had. In 86, we were a better defense than we were when we went to the Super Bowl. Just choose. Statistically, we were better. Mm. So I said, wow. I said, all right, it makes sense. It really made sense to me. So I went back, told the guys, all he's doing is he's trying to push us to reach our potential. Mm-hmm. He said to me, we've been knocked out of playoffs two years in a row in the first round. He said, that shouldn't happen. Not with this team. I said, that's all he's doing. But it made sense to me. And I think it made sense to a lot of the guys. And that year we went to the NFC Championship. Unfortunately, we lost to the great Joe Montana and the 49ers that year. And they eventually won the Super Bowl. And it was just one of those things that you learn by his example. And that's kind of what I've always thought is if the players understand the why, okay, the why, that I think is very important to guys.
So I don't think I've ever truly thanked you for this. Obviously, we have a relationship when we were in Chicago together. And amazing career when you were there. We went to a Super Bowl. Unfortunately, we lost. But in 2013, 2014, I was miserable in Chicago. I hated football. I thought about retiring. It just was like a bad time. And I get a call after that 2014 season. I thought about retirement. And then you gave me a call. I come down. Do like the recruiting trip thing, whatever. And you bring me into Carolina and you literally saved my life from the sense of, or my football life, because I was just so down and out about being in Chicago. It wasn't fun anymore. Like when you were there and I get to Carolina being a 13 year vet guy, and the locker room, the chemistry, Thieves Alley, Thieves Avenue, like just everything that the culture, they keep pounding. It was just like, I don't know, I felt like rejuvenated. And we had, you know, the Christmas that Ryan would do, the Christmas stories. I just said the Christmas stories. I just love that.
That's legendary.
Yeah. he gave great Christmas stories. I'm gonna leave it at that.
Okay.
He gave great Christmas stories. And we just had we laughed so much. We never got tight or tense. And like, what are some of the funny memories or stories that you remember about that 2015 Carolina Panthers season?
Well, first and foremost, to your point about your last year, what we were looking for was some veteran leadership in the secondary. That's the one thing we never had. And in my entire time in Carolina as the head coach, you know, we never had the same starting five DBs. You know, for base or nickel. We never did. We were always changing. For whatever reason, we just couldn't keep everybody. And so finding some veteran guys I thought would be real important, just because I thought we were real close. I really did. In spite of the fact that the year we won it, 7-8-1 in 2014, Roman, I just felt like we were closer than people thought. So finding guys like you and you made the big difference. It really did. And my biggest regret as far as that team is concerned is that we played the best game of the year in the championship game when we beat Arizona the way we did. And we didn't maintain that. And it's one of those things that, God, I wish we'd saved it for the right time. But anyways, some of those hilarious things, and I got the freaking proof right here and I'm looking at it, all right? It's this freaking alligator you put in my bathroom. And it is something. You need to tell the story and I'll jump in on it. But here's the picture. Here's the alligator.
Oh, you got it. Can you show it to the...
Oh, to the camera. Here, look. Close in
nice and tight. All right, now imagine... It's freaking 5:45 in the morning. You walk in, all right? First thing you always do in the morning is you take a shower. That's where I was headed. And I think Charles knew that. That's why he put it in the freaking shower.
So I strip down, wrap the towel around myself, walk into the bathroom, turn the light on, and there's this vicious 3.5-4 foot alligator looking right at me. I throw the towel at him, jump back into my office area. Unfortunately, I was naked, and thank God. Oh, and I heard he wanted to put a GoPro in there.
He did almost try to record it. That is true, too.
That would have been bad. I trust me, that would have been one thing you would not have wanted to see. And so I'm standing, and all of a sudden it hits me. That can't be real. It cannot be real. So I look back in there, and I realize it's not real. So I grab the towel, wrap it around. I run back to the locker room on the far side near the meeting rooms. And who do I see? But I see Charles, and he's talking to a couple of players. And I scream at him. I'm screaming, I got my eyes on you, Charles. I owe you. And I walk back into my shower and put some clothes on. And then Charles came in, and everybody started laughing, which I didn't think was
But it
funny.
I'm not going to lie. I was, like, really scared. Like, you sounded like my dad. When you had like, shorts on and your shirt's always tucked in, always a professional. Oh, yeah. And I remember I was talking to Rome, and I was talking to Kurt.
Yeah.
Kurt it was Kurt. That's right. That's right.
I was talking to Kurt, and I went up, and I was like, yo, I just scared the shit out of Coach Vera, y'all. I put this alligator in his shower, and I think he, Peanut! And I was like, oh, snap. And I was like, oh, damn, I'm in trouble. I might get fine conduct, detrimental to the team. I'm cut. I'm fired. I went too far with this joke. And he walks over with that mean, aggressive walk. And then I was like, he was like, did you put this damn alligator in my shower? And then for like a split second, I was like, I can't. I got to be a man. It's not good. Yes. And I said it like in such a coward voice. Like, I was so scared. I was like, yes, sir. And he was like, well, God dang, man, that thing scared the hell out of me. It's funny as hell. Did you see this scene?
Thought this was the funniest joke ever. He really did.
But you guys remember, where'd you get the idea?
So,
Coach Shula.
Coach Shula told a story maybe the night before or the week before.
The week before.
About the 72 Dolphins. He got up in front of the team. He told a story in front of us. He told a story about one of the players in 72 Dolphins. Something was going wrong, or they needed a good laugh. So one of the players, or a few of the players, they took a real alligator, taped the mouth shut.
Yep.
They taped the mouth shut with this real alligator, and they threw it in Don Shula's shower. And he's flipping out or whatever, so he tells us that story. Yeah. The reason I put the alligator in your shower, we had just lost our first game.
Yeah.
I think we had just lost to
Atlanta.
Yep. Tough game, whatever. It was finally our first game. We were, 14-1.
Yeah.
And I felt like everyone just got, like, real tight. And the building got tight. And the only thing that proved was we weren't going to be perfect. Yep. We weren't going to have the season like the 72 Dolphins. We weren't going to be undefeated. So I was like, I need to lighten up the mood. I need to get everyone just to laugh and just –
Peanut was on the IR, so he had extra time.
We just need
him showing up at 5:30 in the morning before anybody else in the building.
Yet. I wasn't on IR yet.
Oh, you weren't?
No, not yet. I just need everybody to woosah one time, and then I put that alligator in, and then it just, hey, man, we just had a couple laughs, and, you know, we were good.
But that's what
made that season so great, though. I remember we were on the bus going somewhere one time, and you didn't like the attitude of the team. And you called everybody off the bus before we headed to the airport. You called an emergency team meeting.
Sorry.
And then it was like, what are y'all doing? And then, I mean, the message was super clear. Like, look, we're on a mission. We got to play games. We got to win. We got to pack it. And it was just like, whoa, okay. Because I think we started to feel ourselves. Like, our stuff didn't stink.
Yep.
And you checked us. And we received it. And we received it well, because we were getting off the bus. It was like, damn. What do we do? Does someone say something? Mm-hmm. And maybe someone forgot a suit, and it just was a bunch of little things. But before it could have a snowball effect for the whole team, you checked us real quick. And that was kind of my way of checking us, was like, look, we just need to have a quick laugh real quick.
I think one of my favorite moments, too, was the Thanksgiving game when we played Dallas in Dallas.
Oh, yeah.
We had the night before, Stephanie had arranged for a Thanksgiving dinner, and we put it out to the players. But the whole topic, if you remember, that was the game Tony Romo was returning.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the whole thing was,
they were undefeated and they were favored.
Yes, they were favored. We were the only, I think we were 10-0 or 11-0 at the time, and they were favored. We're the only undefeated team to be an underdog to what were they? They were 6-6 or 5, something like that.
Yeah.
oh, and that was it. And it, and I brought that to your attention and then turned it loose and you guys fed off it. I mean, it was amazing.
You know, I think some of the things, Coach, one thing in particular that I still live my life by every day now, I try to. And it's a thing that you talked about all the time
every day.
To that team. And I appreciate it. I would like to know where you got it from, but it's be where your feet are at.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when you're at home, be with at home. When you're with the team, be with the team. I don't know where you got that from, but it's so genuine and true.
There's actually a sports psychologist, a guy that I had worked with when I first started coaching in the NFL. While we started getting on a roll, and I started noticing that we were drifting a little bit. Kevin Elko, that's who it was. Dr. Elko, and so I called Dr. Elko. I said, look, my guys are a little kind of drifting off here and there. I said, what can I do to keep them focused? He said, Ron, simple. Just tell them to be where their feet are.
Yeah.
Be where your feet are. And it's the most simplest thing, because what happens is it's really about wherever you are, be in that moment. If you're with your family, be with your family. If you're at work, be at work. If you're on the field playing the game, play the game. But wherever you are, just be there. And so I've lived with that, and that's something I share with, you know, all the players or people that ask me about stuff like that. I share that, and I give Dr. Elko the credit, because I learned it was such a simple lesson.
It is.
But it makes so much sense. And, you know, and it's, to me, if you can keep your focus just for that moment, you give yourself the best chance to be successful.
So being a military brat, I moved around a lot, and I know we have that that one thing in common is your dad was the Air Force?
No, Army.
He was the Army. Okay, your dad was in the Army, and military brat, you move around a lot, and I think my Mount Rushmore, my dad is like, I thought my dad was G.I. Joe. I thought my dad was like Roadblock. You know, he was Roadblock on G.I. Joe as a kid. Yeah. Like I loved everything about my dad and what he did in the military, and it was awesome. And with that, there was a lot of leadership qualities that my dad learned about when he was in the military, and he would bring those things home. Where do I applaud you for your leadership skills and how you lead your coaches? One of the things that I noticed about you in 2015 that I've still haven't really seen another coach do is you would let a quality control coach get up and stand in front of the team the night before a game, and you would give that coach, was it Cameron Turner?
Mm-hmm.
You would give him, the lowest man on the totem pole at the time, quality control. You would give him 10 minutes in front of the whole team and kind of prepping him, grooming him into a better position, you know, as he progresses with his NFL career. Like, where does that leadership come from?
It comes from my father. You know, a couple things he did for me. When I first got the head coaching job in Carolina, okay, he brought me into our garage, our family garage. I'd come home to visit him. Mm-hmm. He said to me, he said, you know, Ronnie, sometimes when things are going bad, it's going crazy. And it's kind of like in combat. Everybody turns and looks at the CO, the commanding officer, for direction. And he says, if you're out of control, if you're not in control, if you're not calm and confident, your team won't be. He said, in Vietnam, we were being attacked one time, and everybody looked to the CO, and he was unbelievable. He said, Ronnie, you got to be like that. Hmm. And then he said, I want you to stay in the garage for a second. He walked out, closed the door. And he paused for a second, and then he came back in, and he says, just remember, sometimes you're going to be all alone making that decision. You got to make it. So he gave me those little life lessons, stuff like that, just before I took over in Carolina. I mean, I literally just gotten the job. I'd come home to see mom and dad. And, you know, dad always had these messages. And that was one of the messages he gave me. The other thing that I learned from military personnel is everybody has to be ready to lead. And you as the leader have to make sure they're ready. Find opportunities for them. And again, it's just little things that I've gotten from, you know, having grown up military, been in that household, been around, you know, colonels and generals for that matter, and just listen to them talk. So I try to take those messages I've learned and instill them in everyday life.
Tell me this, Coach. It's another thing that you did for me that I think is special. I've never had a coach do that before. And that is, you wrote me a handwritten letter thanking me for being a part of the team and the organization. How often do you do that with certain players? And where did you pick up that? Because that is a skill that, or something that I've never seen.
It's interesting because when I was a kid and I was playing basketball, and I played on a team. And on this team, we had some younger guys that had never played. I was 15 at the time, and these kids were 11 and 12, and you know, was playing in, you know, in Fort Ord at the base gym, at this youth league. And there were these two little kids that were actually pretty good, and so they moved them up to I was playing. I think it was 13 to 15, and I think they were 12 year olds. So they moved them up to play for more competition.
Yes.
Well, because they were younger, they didn't get a lot of opportunities, and so. You know, I was one of the bigger kids, one of the older kids, and so we were winning this game, and they put this one young kid in, and he looked a little awkward and stuff like that. So I went up to him, I said, "Hey, you're gonna be fine. Just throw me the ball and we'll play." So he throws me the ball, right? And then he goes like gets out of the way. I throw it back to him. And he catches it, and I look at him, I said, "Shoot." And he shot and made it. And then all of a sudden he's like, he's got this confidence.
Yeah.
Well, his dad was a colonel, and they literally lived two houses from us. Colonel Jababi, I'll never forget his last name. And so a couple days later, there's this note for me, a little, you know, note card. And, it, you know, I open it up and it's Colonel Jababi at the top. And I said, "Ron, thank you for instilling the confidence in my son to play." And he signed it. So a couple days later, I run into the colonel. And I said, "Wow, thank you for the note." He says, no, "Thank you for the confidence you gave my son."
Mm-hmm.
And I never forgot. So whenever I get certain special moments,
yeah,
I'll send somebody a note. I'll give somebody a note and just tell them, "Hey, I really appreciate what you've done for us." Because the other thing I've learned too is leadership is not about me. It's not about whoever the leader. It's not about that person.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll start with that person. So if you're a leader, just know it. It's not about you, but it's going to start with you. And so I've kept that in mind. And so I've tried to find the right moments to do the right things.
So in 2019, when things ended in Carolina and you're no longer the head coach and you got to move on and go to another team, do you have any doubts within yourself as far as like, "Oh, it didn't work out. Well, maybe I did something wrong, or I wish I would have did this, or I wish I would have did that. Well, I hope I get another opportunity to coach again." Like, do you ever have a doubt in the sense of like why that team let you go and then "I hope I get another opportunity to coach again"?
Absolutely. I mean, the only doubt I had is what did I miss?
Right.
What didn't I do right, and then try to correct that? I knew I would coach again, and I love coaching. It's one of the things that when I left, my only honestly, and I reflect on it because I think it's one of the things that Mike Dicka did, and it was one of the things that he and I talked about.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I asked Coach Dicka one time, you know, after he had got let go in Chicago, we were talking, is when he had been coaching in New Orleans, and I just started my coaching career, and he says to me, I said, "So, Coach, what do you think?" He said, "Well, Ronnie, I got to be honest, you know." He said, "You know, at the end of the day, I might have been too loyal." I said, "I'm not sure I follow you, Coach." He said, "Look," he said, "the hardest thing sometimes you'll face it is when to move on."
Mm-hmm.
When to move on. There's never really the right time to move on.
Right.
Or at least in your mind, you think it, but there really is. But you have to find it. You have to determine that as a coach. He said, people look at it as a cold decision, but sometimes it's the right decision. Hmm. He said, you bring people in for a specific reason. It's like when I was my first year in Washington, and I had brought Thomas Davis in. And, you know, Thomas and I both knew he wasn't the player he was at one point. But the reason I brought him in was so that he could share with the guys to trust in me, to believe in me.
Mm-hmm.
And we got in the same situation. The division was down.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a chance. And I one thing I've always said, if you have a chance, that's all you need.
That's it.
And we had a chance. And Thomas said a few things to these guys about trusting it and believing it. Because this is a team, remember, that had been down for a few years.
Yeah, right.
And needed to find something to believe in. And we got them to rally. And we ended up winning the division. Then we get in the playoffs. And we were the only team that almost beat Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
You know, if you go back and look at it, we lost by a score. And technically, we had a chance all the way to the end. And so that's the thing. That's why you have guys sometimes that are past their prime, but you know they can bring something special. They
locker
can bring
room guys.
The experience.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you had gone through a Super Bowl and won a Super Bowl, and so you could sit there and tell the guy, "Hey, this is what it's supposed to look like."
Yeah.
Those things are missed. I've always believed this, and I've said this to the league. our greatest natural resources, and we don't tap into enough, are our former coaches and our former players. I mean, the wisdom you guys bring, the practicality you guys have and understand needs to be shared with today's players. These guys got to understand just what it means to be an NFL player.
Yeah.
One of the things that I always talk about is, you know, I want guys that love playing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't want guys that love being NFL players. I want guys that love playing NFL football. You want guys that are out there doing their jobs, playing the game the way they should play it, and then representing. You know, you only have one name, and it's right in the back of your jersey.
Yeah.
You got to do honor to that name. Whoever.
I can speak to that. When in 2015, I was on my way home, and I was pulling in the driveway, and he was like, hey, what are you doing? I was like, oh, I just left the building. I'm on my way home. He's like, yeah, come back to the stadium right now. I'm not gonna lie, I got scared. I was like, damn, they gonna cut me already? I thought I was doing something good. And then he was like, yeah, when you get here, just come right to my office. And you didn't say nothing else. So I was just like, we're having this great season. I'm finna get cut during the season. Like, what in the hell did I do? And I get there and you close the door and you just say, hey, what kind of guy is Jared Allen? You know, yeah. How would he mesh with our locker room?
That was a great bring-in.
Is he a good guy? And I was like, oh my God, absolutely. He is going to fit right in. And then I really appreciated the fact that you tapped into me as a resource of having played with him a year ago in Chicago. And when we brought him in, oh, he fit right in. He was amazing locker room guy.
But the thing everybody understand, players know players. Mm. It's like, you know, what I've gone through recently in Washington is I've been trying to find out about the guys we have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things that players, when things are right, players will tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear.
Right.
Okay. And that's another thing that, you know, I try to get across to people is that tell me the truth. Because if you don't tell me what's happening, I can't fix it. I can't correct it. I can't make the right decisions because I'm trying to gather information. And the more information I get, that makes the most sense. And so that's what you look for is, hey, what kind of guy is he? Does he fit? How about a player? Can he be a player? Does he have that ability? And so I think, like I said, that's a resource. That's why I did it, because I knew you would know. I know you would, and I knew you'd be honest too. Mm-hmm. And that's what you look for.
You know, Coach, yesterday you saw us, Peanut and I, we were sneaking out. We were playing some golf. You were just finished up. And literally after 30 seconds, he literally looked at us and was like, nothing has changed with you two. Nothing has changed. I just want to let everybody know, nothing has changed with you two. So I appreciate that, number one. I remember you would always tell us in 2015, you said, guys, you're a great team. You're good, this, that, and other. The best thing you have going for you is who you are. Don't ever stop being who you are. And I think that's so unique because everybody tries to mold you. They don't want you to be this. That team was so unique for me because I really thought that you encouraged everybody to be whoever or whatever they wanted to be. And I also want to say, did you have that connection because of your experience with the Chicago Bears?
Yes.
And that team was so full of all these charismatic, these different characters. And you're
a lot of personality.
And it works.
Yes.
You would always say, I love you for who you are to me. In 2015, we had a lot of personality.
Yes.
And I really appreciated that.
You know, that was one of the things I think that people miss, because for all the way you guys celebrated, okay? You guys did it, in my opinion, for the most part, in a respectful manner.
Mm-hmm.
You guys were doing things on our bench.
Yeah.
Not directed at the opponent.
No.
You guys were handing footballs after you scored to the kids. Did you guys ever see the article they wrote about all the kids that got all the touchdowns that were handed to them? I mean, it's an unbelievable article. I mean, it really is. And it's one of those things that, God, we did do things the right way. And I got to credit Coach Shula with that. Mike was the one who had at one time told Cam, hey, don't do it. Just give it to one of the kids. And so he started doing it, and then everybody fed off of that.
Everybody.
And it was an amazing thing. But then you look at some of the celebrating we did, but most of it was on the sideline, on our bench.
Yeah.
And now look at us today in the league, okay? I don't understand it, because we were getting killed for doing it, and now today they want more of it. And it's like, come on, let's be – we were doing it in 2015. We get no credit.
No credit.
You know, and it's one of those things that – not just about the credit, but just the recognition – And I've always felt this too, and I don't know if you notice it, but I've always felt it was about you guys. It was never about me. I mean, you know, we would go out and they would introduce you guys. I would walk around the side and go to the bench, because to me, it was about you guys. You guys are the ones that were playing. You guys are the ones that people wanted to see. So keep your personalities, be who you are, but live within a certain standard.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Live within those five core values that were put up of hard work, harmony, teamwork, listen, and respect. And if you live your lives that way, you can play for us. And it's a lesson I learned twofold, one from Mr. Richardson, who just recently passed away. Mm-hmm. And the second one was from Cam Newton. What had happened was, and I know you know the stories about the rivalry that we had for those years.
Yeah.
But it happened, I think it was during the 2014 season. And something happened. I was mad at him. And so he and I were talking. I said, and I don't want to call it a mistake, but I said to him, I said, why can't you just be like, and he looks at me and goes, like Tom Brady, like Drew Brees, like Aaron Rodgers. He's a coach. I can't. I got to be who I am for one reason. That's it, coach. Mm-hmm. Because if I do it my way, okay, the way that represents who I am, then others behind me will know. And that's when it made me realize, man, he understands and feels that burden. Mm-hmm. And so it also made me realize that I can't take away from who he is.
Yeah,
that's deep. I can't. And it really was, Peanut, because it hit me pretty good. And, you know, yeah. I mean, I'd like to believe I'm a practical guy, but
yeah, you are.
That was something I really, truly learned.
Yeah.
And so other than doing something physically violent against somebody else, I wanted the guys to be who they are, mm-hmm. play to their ability so people know who they are. And it was something that I think that as I reflected on it, we did that in 1985 with Mike Ditka. He wanted us to have that personality. He wanted us to play free and loose and have a good time and enjoy it and appreciate it. And I really, like I said, as I go look back, that, you know, other than not winning that game, you know, that Super Bowl 50, everything was what I thought it should have been.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we played the best game 2 weeks before.
Yeah.
That's my biggest regret.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
A few years ago, my dad gives me a phone call, and my dad and I were super close. And he calls me, and he's like, yeah, you know, just wanted to let you know, I went to the doctor, and I got prostate cancer, and I'm getting a surgery. Everything will be good, and I love you. I talked to you later. Bye. And he got up, and I was just like, wait, what? What just happened? Like, yeah. He didn't really want to. He was vulnerable, but he was vulnerable for, like, I don't know, maybe 60 seconds, and he wanted to hurry and get off the phone because I think he had a really hard time telling me. And I was just like more shocked than anything. And he had already had it for maybe a month, and he just waited for a while to call me and tell me. And, you know, the process he went through, he's great. He's healthy now. And I know you had it recently and a few years ago. And one, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're healthy. Mm-hmm. You only miss like 3 practices. Like, you are an freaking Iron Man. And I just, one, again, I'm happy here, but you, why only miss 3 practices? Why not maybe take time off? Or like, what was that process like?
It was an accident. So this true story. So we're going through the process. We're meeting with doctors, we meet with the oncologists, meet with my radiologist. And we're talking about what I should do and how I should do things. And they kept saying, you've just got to manage the treatments. You just got to manage the treatments. You just got to manage the treatment. And I mean, every time we talk,
that's the only advice they're giving you.
That's what they're telling. No, that's part of the advice. Yes. But that's one of the things. But the thing that stuck in my mind was they kept saying, you have to manage the process. You have to manage it. And so finally, when we're getting ready to start, Stephanie and I were sitting there and look at the docs, and Stephanie goes, well, should he work? It was absolutely. I mean, the majority of patients end up in the hospital. You got to, you know, so I'm thinking to myself, I have to, I must, I got no, I have no choice in the matter.
Right.
So I constantly would try to just try to just keep going through, just, you know. So what happens is it's the Tuesday after my second cycle of chemo. I just went in, had a checkup, radiation, all that stuff. I just gotten radiation that morning. And so they take me to see my oncologist. And as I finish my treatments, you know, I had to wear one of these masks that they bolt you into the table so you can't move. And then the machine is literally about 9 inches from your face. And then it makes all this noise. And then as I finish and they get me out, I go to get up and I can't move. I mean, just, and I was really weak and I really literally had to roll myself off and the technicians catch me and they get a wheelchair. And it's the only time I got in a wheelchair during that whole process. And they wheel me up. I do my checkup with the doctor and he said, well, you know what? You should get some IV fluids. So we call RV. Stephanie calls RV, the head trainer at the time, mm-hmm. with Washington, and tells him. So they said, all right, well, bring him to the facility. This was Tuesday. So the players were off. So she drives me there. And so we get to the front door and I go, Stephanie, I can't, there's no way I can get. So she says, well, let's go to the back door. So the back door's on the other side and it's down a level. So she drives it all the way around. He comes out and the two of them carry me into the room and the players are there. They're working out. We had about 25, 30 guys there working out or getting treatment and they see me. Mm-hmm. And it went from all this noise to dead silence.
Yeah.
And so they walk me in really slowly, get me into there. I get treatment. And then I look at her, I says, I can't work today. You got to take me home. So she takes me home. And it was one of those things where they tell you, you have to eat. You got to eat. And it was one of those things that, you know, Jonathan Stewart and his wife sent me this bone broth. And Stephanie had made this soup for me. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get up to eat at lunch. And so I hadn't eaten all day. And Stephanie says the one job she had was she was to make sure I ate.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't eat. I wouldn't get up to eat. So she calls our doctor, team doctor. He starts yelling at me over the phone. You got to get up. You must. You got to eat. So I get up and I eat. And as I'm getting up, and, you know, Courtney was living with us mm-hmm. at the time because of the pandemic. And she sees me. She's really upset. And, you know, so she leaves me. Stephanie gets really upset. She leaves me. Then our dog, he looks at me and he's, you know, he leaves me. And the only one left is our other dog. And she's sitting there staring at me. And I figured, oh, well, at least I got one friend. And I realized she just wanted the toast. Give her the toast. She leaves. So I'm there by myself and I begin to eat. And the more I started eating, the more I started thinking, God, I got to do this. I can't do this just for me. Right. This is my family.
Yeah.
And so that's what pushed me on. So then there were a couple of practices where I had that moment where I started to feel that way. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to stay in. And so the team went out and practiced on their own a couple of times. That was just because of that fact that I just knew that I needed to rest. So yeah. I did. But I was able to get through it. So I finished, long story. So I finished treatments and I ring the bell. And the docs come in and we're sitting there talking and they sit there and they say, well, you got any, you know, what you did was an amazing thing. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, you got through all the treatments. You know, right now everything's fine. You're healthy and all yep. this stuff. He said, and yet you didn't miss a game. You only missed a couple of practices. And I said, well, I thought that's what you guys told me. He said, no, you could have gone to the hospital for a week if you needed to. And I had no idea that was an option. When he said you got to work, or you know, I took that as I had no choice in the matter.
So survival,
that's exactly what it was. It was mind over matter, you know. And again, a lot of you guys, I appreciate the text message you guys sent, stuff like that. It was great. It really was because I tell people this now because it's crazy. I have people reach out to me from all walks of life.
Yeah.
About, hey, would you mind sending a text message to my brother? He's getting treatments right now. Or you mind giving a call to somebody? And I have, and the reason I do that is because I'm telling you. When you go through it, every morning, my youngest brother, who was in California, Courtney or Stephanie would get up with me at 5:30 in the morning, get me ready, take me to the hospital. And my youngest brother at 7 o'clock would send me a text message because he was getting ready to go to work mm-hmm. in California, which is 4 o'clock in the morning. But, and it was, all right, Ronnie, we got this. Let's go. Or my brother Steve, when he would wake up, you know, he's retired now, and he would get up. As soon as he got up, send me a text. Hey, how'd it go? Everything good? I mean, every day, and it meant something to me. So when people ask, I just try to pay it forward. But, you know, the long story short is I didn't realize it. And so you're absolutely right. It was mind over matter. And the one thing that got me too is several of you guys sent me messages about, hey, you got to control it now, coach. You got to control your ape. You got to control your attitude, your preparation.
Control
your
ape. Ape. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was it. You know, that was one of the things that also helped me get through that.
That's got to feel great though, because the bond that you've had with your players.
Yep.
And then they come back and they reach out to you. Like, that's just, to me, that's a testament of who you are as a person. Forget coach.
Yeah.
That's just a testament to who you are as a person. And I don't think enough people know that about a lot of coaches. You know, like, you're men first, and you're trying to instill in us, yeah, want to be better players, be Hall of Fame players, win a championship, but you're also teaching us how to be men.
Yes.
You know, I grew up in Chicago at the age of 22, and I grew up in front of like cameras and interviews, and I retired when I was 34, and I learned a lot from coaches like yourself, Lovie Smith, Steve Wilks, Bob Babich, John Hoke. You know what I'm saying? Like, you guys instilled a lot of men quality, leadership, character, skills within us. I don't think people really realize the impact that you guys have on young men entering this league.
People ask me about, you know, my best coaches. And I always tell everybody, my first coaches were my parents. My next coach, obviously, and a lot of us bond with them, is our high school football coach.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
A lot of us do. Mine was an amazing man. He was from Texas, from Southern Texas, African-American. I mean, just, and he didn't see color. And it was one of the most great lessons to learn, because it didn't matter who you are or who you were, or where you came from, or what rank your dad was. He was going to treat you the same way. And I learned so many messages. In fact, he came to the Dallas game. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Yeah.
Because I introduced him to you guys. Yes.
I remember that. Yeah.
Coach Stevenson. Yeah. And a tremendous man. And I learned so much from him. But the biggest lesson I learned was you treat everybody the same.
Right.
So what happened was, we played a game in high school. And, you know, I played both ways. I was a quarterback. I was a middle linebacker. So, I mean, just, and it was one of those games that I was really sore the next day at practice. And so I was kind of, you know, Ron, you need to do this. Oh, I don't know. He said, what's wrong? I said, well, I'm really sore, real beat up today. He said, okay, start running. I said, what? He said, start running. So I start jogging around the practice field. And I kept going and just kept going and kept going. I jogged around the practice field for an hour and a half. And, you know, and didn't say anything. He didn't say anything to me, and we got done. And he said, how'd you do? I said, what do you mean, how'd you do? He said, well, you got to work out, didn't you? I said, yeah. He said, okay, good. I said, well, what was that all about? He says, well, hey, if you weren't going to do this for work, you had to do something for work, so I had you run. And it was just showing everybody, it didn't matter who I am.
Yeah.
I'm going to treat you the same way.
He's not going to be out here, but he's going to be working.
He's going to be working.
And you need to see it.
That's exactly what it was all about.
It really is.
I'm glad you didn't make us do that.
Yeah, me neither. Coach, talking about treating everybody the same, one coach or one person that has come up the last few coaching cycles, and everybody's always asking, what's up with Eric Bieniemy? Why is he not getting a job? He's an OC here, you know, for under Andy Reid, and everybody else has been able to move up and this, that, and other. What made Eric Bieniemy the right fit for the Washington Commanders and for your offense going forward?
What I kept noticing about Eric was, as I watched, and I called Andy Reid, Coach Reid and I talked, and he was tremendously gracious. But then what I did too was I talked to a couple of coaches that I had worked with and on Andy Reid's original staff.
Yes.
Okay. Steve Spagnuolo and Dave Tobe were two guys that I played with. We grew up in the league. We started together. So I knew I could trust those guys. And they said the same thing. They said, Ron, you're going to love this guy. The way he works with people, the way he connects with players, his imagination, his play calling. He's learned so much from Coach. And it's funny because when I first would do the interviews, when I first got interviewed for head coaching jobs, and I had done seven of them prior to getting my job, I finally asked the folks at Detroit and the folks at Pittsburgh, what was it that I could do better? And they said, your problem, Coach, is you come in, and they both said it independently, was you talk about Andy Reid. what you learned from him. You talk about Lovie Smith, what you got from him. You talk about Norv Turner. You talk about what everybody else. Tell us what you're going to do. Talk about you. Mm. Why you? Mm. And all of a sudden it dawns on me. So I've never been in Eric's, and I wonder if everybody thinks, okay, does that what he talks about instead of saying, hey, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So when Eric came in and we sat down, and we talked, I said, what are you going to do for us? He says, look, coach, I like your personnel. I mean, he knew our personnel. We talked about the offense line. We talked about tight ends, running backs, quarterbacks, wide receivers, and he had a plan for everybody and how he wanted to use them, how he wanted to do it. And what had happened was, as I was going through the process and I was looking at all the different candidates, and I got some wonderful candidates, and I wanted to treat everybody the same. Mm-hmm. So I brought everybody in. We flew them in. We sat them down. They met with everybody. They got to interview them. Only one candidate I couldn't. And what happened was, I actually was out in California, so I went up and saw him in San Francisco, and we met in person. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to make sure everybody understood that this was what I really wanted to do and do it the right way. So when I sat down with Eric and just listened to him, and I kept thinking to myself, okay, so I really wonder, and he and I haven't talked about this, and I should talk with him about it just so he understands, is that I wanted to know what he wanted to do and how I wanted to do it. And I heard that. And what it did was it matched up to the way they were using their talent in yes. Kansas City.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
You do see it.
Because the ball is spread around. I mean,
right.
To the receivers, to the tight ends, to the backs. And they were utilizing these guys, quick throws, making explosive plays, stuff like that. But listening to him tell me what his plan was for everybody and what he thought we needed to do and how we needed to do it was great. It was a lot of good information that just told me he's ready. And one of the things that Andy felt, and he did the same thing with Coach McDermott, was he felt Coach McDermott had to get out from under the shadow of Jim Johnson.
Yeah, he did.
And so when he came to me and I hired him, one of the things I said to Sean, I said, Sean, let's build this, okay? You build it. Okay, so we can say at the end of the day, you did this.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's what I wanted to make sure everybody, and look at him today, look what Sean's done.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing with Eric. He felt, Andy called me and we talked and he gave me a lot of insight into Eric and I talked to the coaches, got great insight, and he's right. Eric needs this opportunity, just so everybody knows, he's his own man.
Right.
And he's capable. So I'm excited for him. I really am. And I think this is what Eric needs and this is what we need.
I'm excited. And
Coach, man, I'm super excited. Me too. And I love that, continue to provide opportunity, continue to, help build upon others' careers. Peanut really talked about how you do that in other different ways. And I want to know a good story. Like, what's your best Peanut Tillman story? Because I know you have a lot. You already shared with us the crocodile. I mean, the alligator.
Croc alligator, same thing.
Well, crocodile's a lot bigger. Clearly would have been an alligator. All right. So what is your best Peanut Tillman story that you could actually share with us?
Well, this will be good.
Now I'm trying, man. There's a lot of them, but one of my favorites is when he tells a story about his rookie year in Chicago. I wasn't there yet.
Uh-huh.
So he's telling me his rookie year, they had a big defensive lineman that liked to pick on the young guys a little bit. And Peanut talks about how he had to get into the dirty clothes hamper and pretend he was a car driving through the streets of Chicago. He had to make car noises. He had to pretend he was making turns using a blinker and just basically driving it. And when you hear him tell the story, that's who he is. It's a great story to hear. It really is.
Yeah. So this big defensive lineman is Ted Washington.
Oh, Ted Washington was huge.
He was very large, massive.
Large individual.
He was massive. This is really my welcome to the NFL moment.
Okay.
I just did the cold tub. All the vets just dunked me in the cold tub. I got taped up. They dumped me in the cold tub, whatever. Yeah. And the next day or 2 days later, Ted comes in there, and we were supposed to go the long way around. I went through trying to take a shortcut, trying to be sneaky. I get caught, and Ted says, hey, listen up. I need you to get in the dirty clothes hamper. He says, and he tells you, he was like, hey, get in there, and I'm going to push you around, and I need you to make all the noises. And my pride stepped up, right? Yeah. I'm just like, wait a minute, man. I'm a grown-ass man. You're not going to make me get in this dirty clothes hamper. Like, I'm a Tillman. I'm Peanut. So then I look at all the other vets start to step up, and I was like, yeah, all right. and I'm trying to, be political. I'm like, Big Ted, you just got me the other day, man. Like, I apologize. I'm sorry if I'm being disrespectful. I'll go the long way. Apologies to all you veterans. Like, hey, apologies, brother. My bad. Get your ass in there. I was like, oh. So I get in this hamper, right? And it's dirty clothes and stuff stinks.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I was just
yeah.
like, oh my God, why am I doing this? So I swallow my pride. I get in there and all the vets, they're taking off their pads and whatnot. So they all come around and he's pushing it around. I'm like, vroom, vroom, and then he starts ramming it into the locker in the wall. And I'm just, yeah, boom. And he's like pushing it into the wall. Then he bags it up and I'm making beep, beep. I'm making all these sounds and everybody is just laughing, right? I'm just like, man, this is a bad day. So after about, I don't know, 15, 30 seconds of pushing me around, he clearly doesn't have stamina or cardio. He's about 330. So he's all cardioed out from pushing me in this damn laundry basket. And then he picks up the laundry basket with the laundry and me in it.
Yeah.
And he picks it up and then he just threw it. And I fall out of the thing and I was like, appreciate you, Big Ted. And then I walk out the locker room. I was like, man, I hate this dude. And then they traded him like 3 days later to New England. And he goes and wins the Super Bowl with Belichick when they played Carolina in Super Bowl, whatever. But I was so happy they traded Big Ted. Oh my God. That was, oh yeah, that's definitely my welcome.
I had never heard of this story.
Yeah, that's my
never heard this story.
That's my welcome to the NFL moment. Speaking of NFL moments, as a head coach, I know we all have them as players. What was your welcome to the NFL moment as a head coach?
We've heard some interesting stories from other coaches today. I think it's been highly interesting. Moment.
God. Yeah. So like something was like, damn. I did not see that happening. Like, you know, when you
I mean, there are a lot of things that it's been a while, but I know, well, I'll never forget my first NFL season. What happens is
there's as a coach or a player?
As a coach.
Okay.
There's a lockout.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lockout. I don't get to meet my team until we get to training camp. Mm. So I had no OTAs, no mini camp, no first team meeting. First team meeting I have is my first day. Ooh. So bring the team in. They do the conditioning test, which you're not allowed to watch anyway. So they had, at the time you weren't. So they did all that stuff. So I really don't get to speak to the guys as a group until that first meeting. So speak to them. Come down to practice the next day. First practice in the morning, full pads. Okay, Steve Smith's on the team. One of the all-time great, and I really believe he is a Hall of Famer, but yes. one of the really great wide receivers in this league. And so we start practice and Steve is just goes at it 100%. Well, I'd never been around Steve. And so start this team drill and I'm watching the team drill. And also I hear this ruckus over to the wide receivers and I look out and I say, oh, this is one-on-ones. Okay. So now we finish the one-on-one drills. We start team pass. We're doing the team pass drill, and he's out there and the corners on him, and they start back and forth. And I think, okay, this is getting ready. This is going to be on. So I start walking over there, and the ball gets snapped, and within a second of the ball being snapped, there's an all-out fight. And it's the team he's fighting with the DB and the defensive guys come over, the offensive guys come over. And I mean, it's been less than a full day and I'm with this team and they're fighting and beating each other up. And I'm blowing the whistle, trying to get them calmed down.
Nobody listen to that whistle.
Nobody hears the whistle.
I'm blowing the whistle. And I'm one of those coaches that realized I ain't flying in the middle of that. I'm not. Because I had a fellow coach get knocked out one time, when I was coaching on Andy Reid's staff, we were in training camp and the offensive line coach, his offensive line's got they're fighting with my linebackers, so he comes
tried
in,
to get in the middle,
yeah, and one of the offensive linemen throws a haymaker which catches him and he goes and you see it he gets hit pops up and falls over, so I stay out of the middle of it. So this thing starts and I'm blowing the whistle, I'm trying to get guys back, and I'm kind of and it just go, and I'm telling you what I'm saying to myself, oh boy, this is something else. And I can't remember just sitting there looking at it, just going, this is unbelievable. This, what have I got myself into?
Day one. That's
y'all
a good
that.
Story. That's not what I was expecting was a player fighting day one.
Oh, wow.
And the situation being in the lockout season,
yes,
where very, very unique situation for those that had to go through it and play through it. So, Coach, we always like to ask everybody this one question. And so it's about your Mount Rushmore. So who would be on your Mount Rushmore of life, influencers, not just football, but overall in life? You get four.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead.
I'm going to count my parents as one, first and foremost. What was
second,
that?
Without, second, we, second player to, we, or person to do that.
We allow that.
Without a doubt in my mind, mom and dad had the most unbelievable impact on me and my three brothers. They'd be at the front of it, just like you said about your dad. My parents would be at the front of it. Carl Stevenson, my high school football coach, because again, you know, you make that connection. You know, my dad was sent to Korea. It was my junior year in high school, and coach stepped in. He checked in on my younger brother and I. My two older brothers were out, you know, they were living on their own. And so it was just my younger brother and I and mom. And mom was a nurse's aide, so she was at the hospital, you know, working a lot. So coach always checked in. He'd check in on my mom. Hey, everything, how the boys, you know, that, I mean.
That's awesome.
And yeah. And just he was there for us while my dad was gone. So that's why he made such an impact on me. And I'll never forget coach. He recently passed away at the age of 78. Just a tremendous man. I mean, just somebody that I'll never forget the impact that he made on my life. Man, when I think about it, there's so many other people that have had that impact on me.
Oh yeah.
That now I try to figure out what point did they impact me? How did they impact me? And it's hard to say at that. It really is. Gosh. I had an Uncle Larry, who was my godfather, and he played football. And he was one of those guys that, you know, he got hurt in college, and back then you got hurt in college.
Done.
You were pretty much done. He was a knee injury too. But growing up, he was a guy that everybody talked about in the community because he was that great an athlete.
Mm.
Goes into college and gets hurt and the career ends, but his legacy carried on. And he had this way of saying things to me. Like if I ever got myself in trouble, you know, he was there, he always tell me, oh, go see your mom, face the music, get it over with. Trust me, you'll be okay. I mean, he was that kind of voice for me. So I would put my Uncle Larry up there just because throughout this whole time, he made that kind of impact on me as well. And then my mom's dad, my grandfather, he was never a naturalized citizen. He had his green card throughout his life. And he worked the fields of Salinas Valley as a farm worker. And he used to always show up at all of our sporting events that he could get to.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes he would literally come out of the fields wearing those big rubber boots, just caked in mud, overalls, gloves, you know, everything dirty. He'd sit off to the side and he'd watch the games. And you always wanted to see if Grandpa was there.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things because you knew that in his mind, it was about the American dream. And the one thing I never forget was that he had bought his house. Okay. He actually came from the Philippines, worked in the fields, and his whole goal was to buy his own house. And I'll never forget when he had bought his own house and we were over visiting and I had just turned 15. And he said, I think it was when I just turned, he said, Ronnie, I want to show you something. And he pulls it out, the deed to his house. He said, I own this. And it made an impression just thinking, man, wow. I mean, and I really didn't understand it till I got to college and he got sick and passed away. But just thinking about what he had done, you know, raising the family he raised, making the impact he had on us. I mean, mine's, you know, my Mount Rushmore is really family oriented.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what, you know, for me, that was important. It really was. I mean, I got to go to Puerto Rico, see my dad's family, not as much just because, you know, getting to Puerto Rico isn't as easy as you like to. And I can remember going to the family farm and seeing it. And I can remember the original farmhouse is in the middle of this 40 something acres that they had. and it's still there, and they keep it there, and they keep it up. Some mm-hmm. of the cousins keep it up because they think it's important for the whole family to know where we all came from.
Yes.
So when you see this, it started off as this originally was just one room hut. And then it became two rooms. And the second room really was the bedroom for my grandparents. And everybody else, you know, they had this little area where they slept, this kitchen that they had, and just like this family room. And that was it. That was the size of it. And it's there. And when you get up on the hill and you look down and you see that, and you see all the stuff that they had, you sit there and go, that's all they had? Then you realize that's all they needed.
Yeah.
And so, so that's why I think for me, that would be more of a family thing.
We're living our second acts via, our next job since playing football. What advice would you give a player going into retirement or their next act of life?
Oh, have a plan. Have a plan. I didn't have a plan for the most part, mm-hmm. really, because I kind of wanted to find out what I wanted to do. And I started working in the real world and I hated it.
What do you mm-hmm. consider the real world, Coach?
Yeah, what job was that?
It was a real estate job.
Okay.
Okay. And when you have to work on somebody else's schedule that doesn't impact you the way you should, it's bothersome,
Yeah.
I hated having people dictate to me. And I thought, you know what? This isn't for me. And I was struggling. I really was. I mean, things were going well. I was making money. But I wasn't happy. Yeah. And more importantly, my wife knew that. Mm. And I know you guys know Stephanie. And first thing she said, you got to get back into football. And I said, wow. She said, I don't care what you do, but you got to get back into football.
Yeah.
And so it drove me to a situation where I was talking with Walter Payton. I was actually doing some radio and TV like a lot of guys do when you get out. Yeah. And I got to do the pregame, sideline, halftime, and post-game show for the Bears opener in, I believe it was 1996, I believe it was. And they were opening up against Dallas. And I'm watching it and, I'm talking about the game with Walter. And Walter looks at me and goes, how come you're not coaching? I said, Walter, I don't know how to get in. I don't know what to do to get in. And he looks at me and says, come see me tomorrow. Come by my office. Let's talk. So the next day I show up at his office and we're sitting around and, we're talking and just having a great time. And Walter looks at me and goes, you should be coaching. He said, I listened to you talk about the game, and I remember when you were a player. He said, Ron, Chico, you need to get into it. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I got to figure out how. He goes, I'll talk to Ed. He was talking about Ed McCaskey. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, really? He said, yeah. So he talks to Ed McCaskey the next day, because Walter at the time was on the board of directors for the Chicago Bears. So he talks to Mr. McCaskey. He calls me up. He says, hey, Cheek, Ed wants to see you tomorrow. It's okay. So I think by then it was either Wednesday or Thursday. So I drive over to the Bears facility. I sit down with Mr. McCaskey. He says, look, Ron, he says, we've already started the season. So next year, I'll make sure you connect with Dave, Coach Wanstead, and we'll go from there and we'll see what happens. I said, okay. So lo and behold, true to his word, February comes. I get a phone call from Dave. Hey, Ron, why don't you come down and see me? Okay. So I come down, we sit down, we start talking. I said, look, I think I want to do this. In fact, I know I want to do this. Mm-hmm. Really? He says, okay. Well, so he says, we have mini camp coming up pretty soon and then OTAs, and I'd love for you to be part of it. And so I said, sure. Well, while they were doing that, they had just started the Bill Walsh pro coaching internship program, mm-hmm. minority internships. And so he said, we'll get you in on that program. So they get me in on that. So my whole goal in doing this was to make myself so needed that they were going to hire me for real.
Okay.
So I start showing up at 5:30 in the morning. I'm making copies and I'm making coffee. I'm taking coaches' cars to get them washed and get gas for them. I mean,
everything.
I mean, nothing was beyond me.
Right.
And then I learned to do all the computer work. Mm-hmm. Okay. And back then it was the Avid system, inputting games, doing the analytics back then, where you would get the readouts from all the statistics, and I was breaking them down. I was trying to find the stuff that was important, then writing little reports on them and getting ready for Bob Slowick, who was the defense coordinator at the time. His son's now the offensive coordinator at Houston. Huh. So I started learning all this stuff, and I started putting this all together. And then halfway through training camp, I wrote a job proposal. It was a 2-year internship. And one of the things that I did was I wrote, one of the greatest natural resources you have are the former players. And yet there's nothing to help them get into football. And that was one of the lines that Mr. McCaskey thought was important. And so he said, we're going to give you an opportunity. And so that's how they hired me. And from that point on, I got started. So have a plan. Know what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know, I've talked to several of your guys' former teammates. Remember Ben? I'm drawing a blank on Ben's last name.
The linebacker?
Yes.
Yeah. I know you're talking about. I forgot his last name, but yeah. I know you're talking about.
I should know because he works with me. But I told him, I said, look, that's something you should think about. I mean, you're a smart guy. You played the game. You played it, you know, with emotion. Ben Jacobs. And I said to Ben, what's your plan afterwards? He said, I really haven't thought about it. I said, well, if it's something you want to do, let me know and we'll find a way to do an internship. Well, sure enough, lo and behold, he calls me. I said, yeah, absolutely. So came in, did an internship for a couple of years. And then when I got this job, I called him and says, you want to keep coaching? He said, absolutely. I said, well, you're going to have to move from Carolina now. I mean, you know, see, that was one of the things that when I first started coaching, I wasn't sure how Stephanie was going to react to coach.
It's a movie.
First thing she said, let's go. It's another chapter. Let's go.
I love it.
Oh, yeah. She was right. She was all in.
I love
it. She's been all in. She really has.
I love it. So last question. You know, this is Knucklehead for a while. I've known him a while. He's older than me. Well, he looks older than me. Give me a good Roman story. Give me a good funny. Or
I would love to hear this myself.
Yeah, no. give me a good Roman Harper Deacon story. The Deacon.
You know, the biggest thing I could always say is that every now and then Roman and I would have this conversation about Carolina versus New Orleans. Yeah. and even you know what I was trying to do was get him to completely buy in 100% in us, and he did for the most part. Except for I knew he still had that love and respect for what he did in New Orleans. And I don't blame him because they won a Super Bowl. And you have those teams that are special. And we would talk about stuff. And there were certain some things he would refuse to talk about. And he knew I knew that he knew. Okay? And he would just give me that glance. And I said, okay, that's all I need to know. He said, no, I didn't say anything. I didn't say a word. I said, I know he did. But I know. But we had some great rivalry. We really did. And Rome was one of those guys that you loved to hate because he wasn't on your team.
Right.
But you loved him because the way he played. And I told him a story. I said, when we were watching you and D'Amico coming out, that's when we saw Mark Anderson.
Yeah.
Because we were writing these guys up. You know, they were going to be first round picks. We knew these guys were for real. But we saw Mark Anderson, the defensive end. And we just kept saying, who's this guy? I mean, he's playing left end. They run the ball to the right side, and he goes 30 yards and makes a tackle at the sideline. And you sit there and go, oh, so that's how, you know, but we knew who he was.
Right.
And just knowing that, you know, he was in New Orleans, you know, like I said, you love to hate him just because of who he was. But, you know, he was one of those. The thing I respect more than anything else, though, was the way he handled himself.
Right.
You know, a lot of guys come from different teams and they won't buy in at all. He bought in, but I knew he had this passion for what they had done in New Orleans. And that's what you want. Because when you're part of something that was special, you don't forget it.
Right.
You really don't. No matter what. You can say all you want. But deep down, you have that. And I knew he did.
We still talk about 2015. Like, that was
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was special.
We still talk about it.
Even though we didn't win it, I think that's one of those teams that you sit there and you have to respect. You know, our biggest mistake was, like I said, you know, we couldn't get past the way we played the championship game. And it was probably my fault in trying to find a way to get past that.
Right.
That was the one thing we didn't do.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy because I played against Peyton Manning in Super Bowl 44, and he was electrifying. Mm-hmm. He was so good, and we beat him.
Yes.
And then we played him 6 years later in Super Bowl 50, and he was a shell of himself.
Yes.
And we lost. Yep. And it's just like, you just never know.
You don't.
And the best team doesn't always win. No. And like you say, the team that plays the best that day is the one that wins the game. And we were not that team. And if we played that team 10 times, we'd win 8.
Yeah.
And we were that good. We were that dominating all year long. And literally we played our worst game in the biggest game of the season.
I still think too, if me not tearing my ACL, I just would have.
Oh.
I'm not pointing the finger at myself, but I think I could have been more of an asset.
Yeah.
I think I could have helped us out.
Well, I won't call you a liar.
I'm just, you know, you say love to hate. I hate it. love to hate. I hate you.
your whole journey. I just think it's amazing to hear because listening and talking with some other coaches, like we spoke with Doug Peterson earlier and talking about his journey and how he never took a break. He didn't do the real estate thing like you. He literally went from playing to high school coaching to coaching and moving up in the ranks and all of a sudden getting fired at Philly.
And then he took a break.
And it was bitter, was angry.
Yeah.
At what football, this whole place had taken all this long journey, and now he's mad at it, hates it, gets away, does real life things, people lose lives, son gets married. Like, you actually get joy from other things, and you see, like, man, like, I get out of this darkness, I get out of my own way, and now I'm back happy again. I'm able actually to be a better version of myself.
Hit the reset button.
Yeah, but for me, you know, I couldn't imagine taking a break from it because I love it so much. But also the realization of what it's done for me and the platform it's put me on. I mean, I feel that there is a lot of things I have left to do, and that's why I do it, because of the platform.
Yeah.
But also because I want to win. I mean, I don't care about losing. I don't think about it. I don't sit there and get in front of guys, well, you know, if we lose this game, we got to play this game, win. No. Yeah. I get up and say, this is about winning.
Yep.
And so that's where the passion is because it really is. And my big disappointment is when we do lose and then get a chance to watch it, realize that we shouldn't have lost this game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, Coach, man, I'll be so honest and just candid with you. Like, I love your coaching style. I had two coaches in the league. I had Sean Payton and Ron Rivera, and they couldn't be so far different, right? Sean's this fiery, kind of crazy on game day. Ron is just like this.
Even keel.
And I loved it. I appreciated it. And, you know, to see you get up there in front of the room, empower other people around you, and you learn that it really is more than one way to skin a cat. And it's been an honor to get to know you. It's been an honor to see you grow. It's been an honor to say all the other successes that you've had, from being a coordinator to all of a sudden now moving up. And you understand what it's like to look at the way you do, to come from the background that you've come from, and be at this platform that you have. I tell anybody, I said, look, man, my first training camp in Carolina, we had a team meeting and we talked about, like, kind of nullifying using the N-word because what it did for our locker room. I had never heard anybody have this conversation. I thought it was amazing that grown men are in this room. And when most coaches are only so focused on building what play we're running, what we're doing, coach is like, no, we're going to build from within on each individual player. And we're going to talk about experiences.
Right.
We got a couple of white guys up there. Ryan Khalil was awesome. You know, being from California, he's like, dude, I don't even really know. And then, you know, we got some African-American players. One used it for terms of endearment. Others are like, you know what, I actually need to be better about this. And then I was sitting back, and this is my first training camp with this team. I'm like, this is the most interesting team and dynamic I've ever been a part of. And I've only been here for like 6 days. And so when I saw that, I really bought in more. So those are the things that you did that lets people like me that were an outsider who kind of struck up even more of this rivalry thing between the teams and like makes me buy in because I see you guys are doing it differently than anybody else. But I want a piece of that in my life because I had never had that.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, it was a good group of people that we had there. I can't take all the credit for that. That was Mark Carrier.
And
Tony Porter. Tony Porter is an activist who works with the league. And they came to me with that idea. And I thought, you know what? There's some social issues out there that were, you know, kind of lingering and we need to talk about it. And so that's why I felt compelled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I thought it was amazing. It was changing for me. I'd never been in a dynamic like that where we could all just openly talk and discuss about our emotions, our upbringings, about different things. And you're right. Social things were going on in the world that can kind of rip at people. And I know inside of a locker room, we act like, you know, once we're in here, nothing else matters. But sometimes it does.
It does.
Yeah.
True.
Well, Coach, we appreciate you blessing us with your time and just
tell Stephanie we said hi.
Yeah.
And I know she whooped you in golf yesterday.
Yes, she did. believe me, I can own up to that, though. She really is a good ladies player, and she enjoys it. But I appreciate you guys having me on Roman and Peanuts podcast talking about your second act.
I appreciate it, Coach. Thank you very much. Hey, that was dope. Like, I love me some Chico. I love Chico. Riverboat. Coach Rivera, he got so many names. Like, I love that dude. He's amazing. I love him for his leadership, his character, just the man he is off the field. Like, he is just, he's an amazing man. I love that dude.
He gave us a lot of different nuggets in that interview, and his life aspects.
Yeah.
Some of his mantras that he lives by every day, that he walks by, some of the most influential people in his life that he's really been at, it's poured into him, that now he's able to pour into so many others. And he really helped change my whole life and outlook on a lot of different things. I mean, I live in Charlotte, North Carolina now because
he
brought me in. Yeah. So I'm very thankful of him and his wife, his family, and everybody at that organization. And Ron, he's A-plus with me and really high up on my board.
Oh, A-plus individual. I'm Peanut. That's my guy, Rome. And this is the NFL Player Second Acts podcast. Thank y'all for tuning in.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.